98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. 4 o'clock reset.
All right, let's run through the top stories of the day here on the 4 o'clock reset on the Burns and Gambo show with Luke filling in for Gambo today. We start with a matchup tonight between the two best teams in the NBA. The Phoenix Suns will take on the Jazz on national TV, a game so big that one of the top NBA writers in the profession, Chris Mannix, tweeted out today, just what everyone expected in December, Jazz Suns emerging as the best regular season matchup of the year. Will be a fun one in Phoenix tonight. Here's James Jones.
Utah's a really good team. They've been playing some really good basketball in a lot of ways. They do a lot of the things that we do when we want to do, which is, you know, share the ball, defend really well in the half court, and transition, and play team ball all the way through. So, two really good teams tonight, and it should be fun for everyone involved and everyone watching at home.
They are very mirror imagey of each other, aren't they? Not a word, but you know what I meant. You know?
Yeah. It is now. You just said it on the radio. That
Imagy?
Makes it official. Yeah, Imagy. That can be the name of your new company, Imagy. They really are. And you said something earlier that really like stuck out to me. Of you've got two teams that are the two best teams in the NBA right now, and yet everybody looks and they're like, yeah, it'll be the Lakers and Nets. You know what I mean? Like two teams that really aren't getting the respect they deserve, probably.
No.
Nationally.
No, I think when you have conversations about Western Conference teams, you're going to have a conversation about the Lakers, maybe the Clippers, maybe even the Nuggets at this point with how well they've played with the Aaron Gordon acquisition. It just seems like these two teams, despite what they've done so far this year, they're not afterthoughts, but they're certainly not forethoughts, right? They're not the first teams that you're thinking of when you start running through who could win the West or who could be in the NBA Finals. So it should be a lot of fun. Then the Clippers tomorrow night for the Phoenix Suns as well. Diamondbacks will play game two of their series against the Rockies tonight. Madison Bumgarner will look to redeem himself after a rough opening day performance. Coors Field typically not the place where starting pitchers go to get healthy, but we'll see what Mad Bum has tonight.
You know, you look at him and you're like, okay, the way last season went, that's his first time switching to a new team. The spring training was so disrupted where it just like abruptly ended in March. And then all of a sudden you come back and there's like, here's two tune-up games and now you're playing. And you only make 12 starts. Like, you can look at that and you can say, all right, he's a pretty good bounce-back candidate. But, man, you got to start in San Diego against the Padres and then in Colorado against anybody is rough.
Yeah, it's a rough kind of first couple of games for him. Meanwhile, potentially good news for the status of Zach Gallen on the horizon. The Diamondbacks have announced that Caleb Smith will not make his next start in the rotation. He has been sent to the bullpen. There's been no announcement as to who's going to make his next scheduled start, which would have been on Friday. We kind of worked through the numbers. Could be Taylor Widener using the off day to their advantage. Zach Gallen supposed to throw 80 games in an alternate site game tonight, so he wouldn't be available for Caleb Smith's start on Friday. Either way, Caleb Smith is out of the Diamondbacks rotation.
Even just that fact, though, that Gallen's supposed to throw 80 pitches on the side, that to me, I mean, think
it's
about
very encouraging news from where we were about 4 weeks ago, right?
Even like, even two weeks ago,
yeah.
Being like, well, it's his forearm. That's never been good in the history of baseball. And in this case, like, I'm sure he doesn't love having a hairline fracture, but we were all celebrating.
Yeah, no doubt about it. The Coyotes looking for their fourth straight win tonight, taking on the LA Kings. Here's Rick Tocchet.
I still think we have to be ready for a team that's going to be desperate, just like we should be desperate. We're a desperate team also.
Yeah, and the Coyotes need to play desperate because they only have, what, a dozen and a half games left on the season, and they've made a very impressive push this last week or so.
The 17 games left, they're actually as close to third now as they are to fifth, which is good, and they've done it by beating up on the California teams. And to Rick Tocchet's point, the Kings are like a bunch of rookies, but then also like five guys that won all those Stanley Cups back when the Coyotes hated them. So it's like you can't just like look past them.
Yeah. So that game coming up tonight as well. But our top story of the day today on the Burns and Gambo show.
As you're all aware, we've decided to make a change in the leadership of our men's basketball program. After evaluating all the factors involved following the season, I made the recommendation to President Robbins that a change was needed to achieve our objectives as a program, and he agreed. I met with Sean this morning in person to inform him of my decision. Following that, I met with the coaching staff and our student athletes. You know, I want to thank Sean and his family sincerely for their 12 years of service to this program as the leader of our men's basketball program. Can't thank him enough for that.
As Dave Hickey, the athletic director at the University of Arizona, there's so many different ways we can take a conversation about Sean Miller being out as head coach of the Wildcat basketball program after 12 years, three Elite Eights, two more Sweet 16s. We can talk about his legacy. We can talk about the names that have been floated as potential replacements. I guess, Luke, one of the things we really haven't talked that much about is if this was where they were going to go with Sean Miller, why didn't they do this a month ago, 2 months ago? Why didn't they do this the day the Pac-12 tournament was over? Get ahead of it a little. It seems very behind the times a little bit. I can't think of a better way to phrase it. It seems a little haphazard to do this now when the cycle has already kind of closed a little bit when it comes to the coaching carousel.
Yeah, it is. It's curious, right? Like you kind of, I mean, I have never really understood over the last 2 years why they were so defiant and like, no, we're going to stand by this guy and we'll go down with Sean Miller if we have to. And it's, you know, you made the point earlier, like look at what's happening with Bill Self or somebody, or, you know, there are plenty of coaches in college basketball and even college football for sure that have probably done similar stuff. That's like, okay, does it make him a bad guy? No. Does it make him a cheater within the rules? Yeah. Are the rules stupid? Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
But, you know, fair or not, if that coach is winning and his team is winning, it's like, okay, well, we got to stick with this guy. Sean Miller's not winning. Like, you read off a decent resume, but they haven't made it past the first round since 2015.
No, they haven't.
I guess they made the Sweet 16 once.
Here are the numbers that you're speaking of. First nine seasons under Sean Miller, they won 77% of their games. They won 75% of their conference games. The last three seasons, they've won 61% of their games, and they've won 52% of their conference games. And that's why he's not Bill Self, right? That's why, I mean, Stuart Mandel pointed out, very appropriately so, that when talking about Bill Self's level one coach control charge due to his personal involvement in some violations and a failure to take steps, that was one of the accusations lobbed against Bill Self. He got a lifetime contract for that. Sean Miller, quote, did not demonstrate that he promoted an atmosphere for compliance and monitors his staff with the basketball program, close quote. He got fired for that.
Yeah.
You know, Bill Self, basically not exactly the same thing, but some of the same terminology used in terms of the ability to oversee a program and take responsibility for the failures of that program. Bill Self got a lifetime contract. Sean Miller got shown the door.
And like, it comes down to winning. One guy was winning and one wasn't.
Yep.
And you know, you try and quantify like how good of a job this is. And it goes hand in hand with how good Sean Miller was, because to me, now, you said this earlier, like U of A up until recent years, even though they weren't winning national championships or even getting to the Final Four, always kind of a threat at the start of the year. I agree, and they could be that way again in 2 years. I don't think they were that threat because of Sean Miller. I mean, honestly, I think Lute Olson is still more of an impact on why they are a threat and able to recruit than Sean Miller has been. You know, and I don't want to completely discount what he did, but I guess I'm just saying, from if I'm U of A, I can go out and get another guy that maybe he can't recruit quite as well as Sean Miller. Maybe he's better, but I don't have to deal with all the extra baggage.
Yeah, and I certainly can find a guy who's going to do better than 62% of his games,
yeah,
and 52% of his conference games over the. Now, could Sean Miller make the argument that part of the reason why he wasn't able to win those games was because he was hamstrung by recruiting because he hadn't had his contract extended since 2017? Yes, he could probably make that argument. But why would U of A want to extend his contract given everything that was hanging over his head? Which is why today felt like the most inevitable thing that could have happened to U of A men's basketball, and it just begs the question, if you had just done this earlier and gotten ahead of this a little bit, we all know this was where you were going to end up. We all knew Sean Miller wasn't going to be the head coach of U of A for much longer when this stuff started to come down. I don't know why they staunchly stood behind him the way they did, but they picked the wrong horse.
Well, because now it's like, yeah, you stood behind the guy, and now you're admitting you were wrong, basically.
Basically.
Right?
Basically.
Because it's funny, you say, like, we all knew this was inevitable, and I agree. But when somebody sent me that tweet this morning, I was like, really? Like, yes, it was inevitable, but it's April 7th and they're firing him now?
Yeah.
In 2020. Like I said, I would have done it 2 years ago, or I guess at this point you're just committed.
It kind of feels like, and we'll take a break here in a second, it kind of feels like the way decisions used to be made around the Phoenix Suns, you know, firing a head coach 3 games into a regular season, firing a general manager right before the season starts after he's already done all the heavy lifting with. It's just a very weird time to get rid of a guy. Very weird.
It feels like you're playing poker and you have nothing and you just keep bluffing and bluffing and then all the cards are there and then at the very end you fold without even seeing the cards.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show with Luke filling in, everyone is trying to avoid a first-round playoff matchup with the Lakers. So could tonight's Suns game with the Jazz play a factor in dodging LeBron in L.A.? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo show.
It's Suns Day, brought to you by Michelob Ultra Organic Seltzer. Previewing tonight's Western Conference matchup versus the team with the best record in the NBA, the Utah Jazz, which tips off tonight at 7 on the home of Phoenix Suns basketball. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Suns Day with Burns and Gambo.
Yeah, clearly we're a little excited about this one tonight. Luke is filling in for Gambo here on the Burns and Gambo show. Suns Jazz tonight, Suns Clippers tomorrow. It feels like we've been, I mean, no disrespect to anybody the Suns have played in the last month, but it does sort of feel like we've been stumbling along with the schedule waiting for this moment. I mean, there have been decent opponents? Yes, they played the Miami Heat in the last month and played very well on the road against them, although you know, they played a Lakers team, didn't have LeBron, didn't have Anthony Davis. It feels like for the first time in almost a month, the Phoenix Suns are playing a significant type game against a Western Conference team that we've got a lot of eyeballs on, right? Remember they went through that stretch where for like 2 weeks they were playing the Bucks and the Sixers and the Celtics, and they were like big games, national TV, and there was a lot of attention on them. Feels like we've kind of phased away from that in the last month, and now we're back with that with a vengeance tonight with this two-game stretch here.
Yeah, and as much as they, I don't even want to say struggle because they win most of these games, but as much as they don't look dominant against the lesser teams in the league, they have been taking care of business.
You know, they have.
They haven't, that stretch you're talking about against Milwaukee and Philadelphia and Boston was there too, that homestand, that was back in early February, you know, and now here we are in early April, and They've racked up win after win. So they beat Philadelphia. They were 16-9 at that point, and now you're 35-14. So I mean, even since then, you've still gone 19-5. You're right. This is different. And you know, for Booker, it feels like I don't know where Suns fans would rank Devin Booker all time among Suns players. Like who's the best Sun of all time? Who's the greatest Phoenix Sun of all time? Who's the guy you have the greatest connection with? You know what I mean? But this might very well be, and not even just so much tonight, although it's kind of like the clear starting point of it, but this stretch now, the rest of this the regular season into the playoffs could be really the start of his ascension to being like the guy in Suns history. I mean, that's at least possible. That would take years, but I feel like he did all he could do. He was hitting a wall, you know, until the team starts making the playoffs and he starts showing up in playoff games.
Yeah. Yeah, it does, and it starts with these games, and it's with tonight's game in particular, the chance to get to the number one seed, and this was something you and I were talking about pre-show, and while it might not matter a lot at the end of the day whether they're the number one or number two seed, there is a scenario here of avoiding the Lakers, and not that finishing number one guarantees that you avoid the Lakers. The Lakers could end up with the eighth seed and not the seventh seed, and I don't even know if they're going to fall that far, but it seems more likely that if you really want to make sure you avoid the Lakers in the first round of the playoff series, finish as the number one seed in the Western Conference, and you increase your chances pretty well of being able to avoid them early in the postseason.
Yeah, and that, I mean, to have the season that you've had if you're the Suns, I mean, for the Jazz too, I'm sure, I just don't care about them, but I mean, to have those that a season like that and then have to play LeBron and Anthony Davis in the first round, that's not right, and there's nothing you can do about it other than I don't think LeBron will allow the Lakers to drop really even past six, because then you're having to play extra playoff games. Like, I think he'll magically come back and he's LeBron, he'll figure out a way. I don't see them dropping below six. There's no guarantee the Suns are in the top two, though. Like, if you go and lose tonight and tomorrow to the Clippers, it's like, all right, well, now the Clippers are breathing down your neck. I think it's huge to stay in the top two, but I definitely think if you're the one seed, I just can't imagine the Lakers dropping so far where they have to win their way out of that play-in round, and they're not even the top team coming out of
it. Yeah, and you just said something that I think is even – I don't want to say it's more important than avoiding the Lakers, because I think that's the most important thing here. But I think almost as important as avoiding the Lakers is to stay out of that 3-6 range in the Western Conference, because there's just going to be a lot of – bad stuff that happens in there. I was gonna get like really graphic and say something awful. It's not gonna be that bad, but there's just gonna be a lot of nasty opponents, nasty basketball, great teams that are capable of doing anything on any given night. And I think almost as important as avoiding the Lakers is just to stay out of that 3-6 slog as best you can, and give yourself assuming it's not the Lakers at 7 or 8. Give yourself a nice soft landing into your first postseason appearance in 10 years and go play Memphis. Go play.
Oh, that sounds so nice.
Golden State, doesn't it? I mean, it's like the basketball equivalent of sitting on the beach drinking a beer, right?
Yeah.
We're going to have a best of 7 against Memphis, and we're going to put up a little umbrella, and someone's going to bring us drinks, and we're going to sit here and watch the waves come in, right? It sounds lovely to be able to do that.
It does, because that 3-6 range right now, that's the Clippers, the Nuggets, the Lakers. And the Trailblazers, I mean, I give them all the respect in the world, because I think Damian Lillard's one of the best players in the world, but they're not on the level to me.
No, but they're dangerous.
Yeah, I don't want to deal. It's like you're walking through a house, you open up a door, and there's just a room full of snakes. You're like, what's that? That's the room full of snakes. Well, I'm not going to go in there. I'd rather just finish in the top two and play Memphis.
Exactly.
I have no interest in that room.
That room doesn't appeal to me at all. There's danger and death and bad things. I don't want to go in there.
No.
So just avoid it at all costs.
Enough is enough. I have had it with these monkey fighting snakes on this Monday to Friday plane.
Monday to Friday plane.
Monkey fighting? Was that the first? Wow.
Monkey fighting.
Oh, is that the TNT version of Snakes on a Plane?
Yeah, the TBS Turner Broadcasting.
The Turner Broadcasting version of Snakes on a Plane. Wow, you played that. When I didn't hear a beep, my heart, like, for just a second, I thought, Jordan.
Bird has decided to take us all down this afternoon, just moments before the sun's came.
It's been a really fun Burns and Gambo run.
It really has. Thank you all
good
for
night,
listening.
Good night, everyone.
Yep, good night. But
enough is enough! I have had it with these snakes on this...
See, that's what I expected to hear. Yeah. And when I didn't get the beeps, I thought, oh no, Jordan has played the wrong version, and we're all going to go to the principal's office when this one is done.
I'd be like the guy from Clerks. I'd be like, I'm not even supposed to be here. Like, no.
Right. Now, you'd be fine. Wouldn't it be ironic that the day that Gambo's not here, that would be the day we all get in trouble for bad language on the air?
We've all been waiting for his mouth to get us in trouble.
Totally,
and instead.
Totally. It'd be us. It'd be Jordan. Jordan and that button he's pushing in there.
Well, I'm sure Gambo would never let you hear the end of it if that happened.
Oh, yeah. He probably won't let us hear the end of it now.
That's
true. It didn't actually happen, right?
Just getting annoyed already just thinking about it.
All right. Let's play. Okay, we've only got a little bit here left.
Okay.
Quick hypothetical situation with these next two games.
Yes.
They win both by a lot. They lose both by a lot. What changes for the Phoenix Suns if they either go out and win both of these games, or they go out and lose both of these games? How do we view them differently if either one of those scenarios happens?
I mean, I think if they win both of these games, they're going to finish with number one seed. Like, I think they'll run Utah down at that point. You'd be a game and a half back.
Game and a half back. Yeah.
I think, and you beat the Clippers too. I mean, they've lost to the Clippers already this year. If you lose them both, I mean, it doesn't change like what they're capable of, but I think it does sort of pump the brakes on like, I don't want to fall in that 3-6 range, and you're kind of edging towards that if you lose them both.
Yeah, I was thinking about perceptually, you know, how our view of the Suns changed. Like, if they go out and if they go out and they lose fairly badly tonight, you know, what are we taking away from that? What are we talking about tomorrow if that has happened? If they lose a close one, I think we'll still feel fine. Like, okay, they can hang with the best teams in the NBA, but we've just seen so much evidence that they're capable of hanging with the good teams in the NBA. I have a hard time believing they would get blown out.
I'll ask you. They either win both these games or they lose both these games. Those are your only options. For me, I feel more confident they'll win them.
Yeah, I do too.
I mean, they don't lose two in a row.
Yeah, they just don't. I feel more confident they would win both than lose both. But that's, you know, sometimes you're a fan and you get a little confused about stuff like this and you get in those murky waters and, you know, and we'll see tonight. Looking forward to it. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, Luke Lipinski is filling in. Even though his time in Tucson didn't produce everything fans were hoping for, Sean Miller still did accomplish a lot of good. When we talk about legacy with Sean Miller, what do we talk about in Tucson? That's next on the Burns and Gambo show. Let's update our Twitter poll question of the day. We turn it back over to Sarah here on the Burns and Gambo show with Luke filling in.
Burns and Gambo need to know Twitter poll update presented by Sanderson Ford.
I'm laughing at a tweet that I just saw from one of the main guys on Suns Twitter. Isn't it exciting, this mostly unfamiliar feeling of impatience as we wait all day for a really big Suns game? And he just nailed it. I mean, it's just like we're all just kind of, okay, checking the watch. It's 4:35, and it's when does the game start again? Just can't wait for this thing to go.
Just think about the playoffs. The playoffs are going to be, you're going to be back timing your whole day from opening tip off. It's great.
It's those days are, they're some of the best. They really, really are. So, well, with that in mind, what's our poll question today, Sarah?
What is the most significant aspect of the Suns' two-game stretch tonight against the Jazz and tomorrow against the Clippers? Obviously, a pretty big deal for the Suns tonight. The most significant aspect of that two-game stretch, proving to be contenders, not proving to us because we already know, but, you know, nationally, I guess.
Yep.
Playoff positioning, or I'm just happy to have some notable games for the Phoenix Suns right now.
I am happy to have notable games, but I'm going to pick the playoff contention, the playoff positioning. And not just for avoiding the Lakers, as Luke and I were just talking a second ago, for staying out of that pit of despair that is seeds 3 through 6 in the Western Conference. I do not want a first-round matchup anywhere in that zip code. Keep me out of that. So, playoff positioning.
No, I completely agree. I mean, it's like when you're filling out your March Madness bracket and you see one team has this easy path and you see the other team in, like, the East region that it's like, yeah, they could lose their second through their fifth games easily. I don't want to be in that group, and as much as I want to get the one seed, because I think that means you avoid the Lakers, you know, the Clippers aren't that far behind, and the Nuggets are playing really good, and they're not that far behind. You got to stay in the top two, at least, so playoff positioning.
Playoff positioning.
Okay. It's changed a little bit, but it is still overwhelmingly proving to be contenders, the top vote getter for today. 72%, I think it was around 75 at 2:30. 22% said playoff positioning, like you guys did, is the most significant aspect of this stretch. And then 6% are just happy to be here.
It just makes me cringe because not that they've proven anything, they haven't. I feel like at this point the Suns have shown they belong in this conversation just as much as anybody else does. I don't know what else they have to do to show they belong in this conversation. But I get it. If they lose these next two games, there might be some national types who come out and say, see, they're pretenders. They're not contenders.
Yeah. Doesn't it feel, though, like you've been here your whole life, right? Okay, so doesn't it sort of feel like teams in the Valley have to do a little bit more to get permanent national recognition?
Always.
And also, I would even go one step further.
Yes.
I feel like a lot of this recognition that we have gotten up to this point is because Chris Paul's here. It's not even so much the record until recently when they were like a top two team.
Yeah, I not always. I mean, when the Barkley years, the Randy Johnson, Kurt Schilling, Luis Gonzalez, even in the aftermath after the World Series, the Diamondbacks got plenty of national respect.
But those are all great players that came from other teams that were already great.
Yeah, true, true. I mean, in terms of homegrown greatness, yes, sometimes there is this belief that it's not real, you know, that other markets, other teams, other organizations are going to get the benefit of the doubt more quickly, I think, than yours are.
It does feel like a lot of people are just realizing. I think there's a lot of people that think Devin Booker just got drafted last year.
Stephen A. Smith thinks that. Apparently. Look out for Devin Booker, y'all.
I've been in the league for 5 years, Stephen A., but okay, whatever.
Watch out for Phoenix.
Yeah, you got to go dramatic read.
I felt like I had done something wrong after I listened to that. I know about Devin Booker. Why are you yelling at me?
That's the poll question. As always, you can find it on the Burns and Gambo Twitter page, at Burns and Gambo. The other big news of the day, Sean Miller let go after 12 seasons at U of A, three Elite Eight appearances while he was there. The scandal that obviously came to define the program over the last 2 or 3 years in many ways. We don't know who the replacements are. We've seen Damon Stoudemire's name mentioned. He's the head coach at Pacific. We've seen Miles Simon's name mentioned. He's an assistant with the Lakers. Josh Pastner's name has come up, an assistant, one of the top assistants at Gonzaga. His name has been mentioned. But let's talk about legacy for a second when it comes to Sean Miller. We're so close to how it ended that it's probably going to be very difficult to answer this question. But 5 years from now, if I were asking you what was Sean Miller's legacy at U of A, is it the scandal? Is it the Elite Eight?
No comment. You can drive back to Phoenix.
You know, honestly.
Or is it that?
If you're asking my how I'm going to remember him, it's going to be that sort of stuff. Like I saw enough of him arguing with 19-year-old reporters that were asking a question that were like terrified to ask a question, and he just berated them over it. Sarah could speak to this better, but I would think a U of A fan probably remembers him as kept getting us to the Elite Eight, but also never got us to the Final Four.
Sarah?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's about it.
That's how
thank you for what you did do, but there was also plenty that
you didn't
you were going to do and you did not.
Will it be the scandal? Will it be...
I mean, that's certainly part of it, of course, but I mean, I think you have to have more of a wider view there. It's very complicated, and I know that probably feels like a cop-out answer, but it really is not.
That's your relationship status with Sean Miller as a coach on Facebook?
I mean, yes, yeah. It is. Like, there are things that I have and still do appreciate about him, but there are also plenty of things where it's like, man, you really, like, you didn't come through on what we thought you were going
to
do.
Yeah, I mean, if you would have said to me on the day they hired Sean Miller that you're going to get 12 years of Sean Miller at the University of Arizona, man, I would have thought there would have been one Final Four in there, right?
For
a coach who had never been there at Xavier,
yeah,
and who basically had the mantra of best coach to never make a Final Four hung around his neck for the better part of his time at U of A, I would assume that 12 years he would have gotten to at least one or two, given his pedigree, their pedigree, and I think that's probably what I'll remember is that for a program that had everything in the world going for it, they just weren't able to go as far as they should have. It was a disappointment.
Yeah, I think it would be unfair to be like, well, you didn't win a championship, so your time here was a failure. But like, even just look at this year. UCLA was an 11 seed. They made the Final Four. Like, yeah. I'm not saying it's easy to make the Final Four, but over 12 years and you have a program that is nationally recognized and you're getting almost any recruit you want.
Almost any recruit you want.
You can't make the Final Four once? Like, that to me is what's going to stand out.
Yeah. Like I say, I really don't have a rooting interest in this, and I'm being very sincere when I say this. ASU, U of A, when it comes to those two, I root for interesting stories and you know, things like that. I never wanted to see Sean Miller fail. I was never personally vested. I liked watching U of A succeed, but there just wasn't enough of it at the highest level that just kept getting too darn close every single time.
Yeah, I think it also did not help him that a lot of people did not like him as a person, his demeanor, his personality. So as soon as people started to realize, oh, we're just going to keep hitting that like Sweet 16 wall or less.
Yeah.
And people don't necessarily feel a personal connection to the guy. Like, okay, what are you doing in our house is kind of how it started to feel.
It's amazing how much that personal connection as a coach can buy you year or two of a chance to prove yourself. And I mean, I can't help but to think of Dirk Cutter when I say that, you know, that if he had just established a little bit more of a personal connection, that maybe there would have been more of a willingness to kind of ride out the tough times with him to see, but because he never...
Can you imagine if I had to answer all the questions of head coach, how pissed off I'd get every week? call up the media in Phoenix and ask them.
We will.
Yeah, there you go.
That's always my favorite part of that soundbite, the guy in the back. Yeah, we will. We'll give him a call. We'll find out. I'll tell you everything you want to know about him, right? But like a guy like Dave McGinnis, when he was the coach of the Cardinals, he had built up such goodwill. I think he bought himself an extra year or so as the coach of that because everybody liked him so much, right? And that doesn't mean he was good at his job, but everybody liked him.
Well, Sean Miller's the extreme the other way. Like Sarah's saying, he made it very easy to root against him unless you were a hardcore U of A fan.
Yes, and you were willing to look past that.
Yeah.
You're like, I just want the hoops. I just want them to be good.
And I'm not saying this for a cheap laugh. I will always remember the sweat.
Well,
how can you not? It's so prevalent.
I will remember the sweat. That drenched to the skin shirt. In that,
trying not to remember it this vividly.
He touched the ball. I'll remember that from the tournament. And I think it was 2014 against UCLA. He touched the ball. He touched the ball. He touched the ball.
Just remember a guy yelling at everybody.
I will say, though, he was always great to me. So thanks, Sean, in case you're listening.
The Diamondbacks dodged a bullet when we found out about the diagnosis of Zach Gallen. And now it seems like the pitcher might possibly return far sooner than thought. We'll explain next on the Burns and Gambo Show with Luke filling in.
No comment. You can drive back to Phoenix.
The home of Arizona Diamondbacks baseball is 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. We're checking in on the D-backs as they warm up for the game's first pitch. D-backs on deck, brought to you by Sonic. This is how we Sonic. Stop by your nearest location today for the Bacon Jam Cheeseburger for a limited time only at Sonic. And by Trajan Wealth. Get your retirement on deck with Trajan Wealth, your local trusted financial fiduciary. TrajanWealth.com.
The game coming up tonight can be heard on ESPN 620. The Diamondbacks and the Colorado Rockies coming up at 5:30 this evening, and you can hear it there. And we'll give you the pitching matchup in just a second as we welcome you back in to the Burns and Gambo Show with Luke Lipinski filling in last night for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Just look back real quick before we look ahead. Diamondbacks beat the Rockies 10-8 in 13 innings. Very memorable game for the Diamondbacks, given that they had a 5-4 lead going into the bottom of the ninth with two out in the bottom of the ninth. Chris Devenski served up the game-tying home run to Sam Hilliard, and then off we went down into the rabbit hole of extra-inning baseball, even with the new rules. And eventually, despite having a lead in the 10th, despite having a lead in the 12th, the Diamondbacks, thanks to Ketel Marte's two-run double in the top of the 13th, and some very good pitching from Matt Peacock, who joined us earlier, who got his first Major League win, his first Major League hit. He ran about 26.5 feet per second, which is just below the major league average on Marte's double when we had Matt on the show earlier. Diamondbacks got a very satisfying, albeit long, win last night up at Coors Field.
Yeah, look, I mean, if they need a pitch runner tonight, obviously they know who to go to. You brought that up to him, and I believe his response was just shoot. He didn't even dignify it with more than that.
Yeah. They StatCast, this was according to Nick Picoro on AZ Central, StatCast clocked Matt Peacock at 26.5 feet per second. The league average is 27 feet per second. He called himself Forrest Gump when he was on with us earlier. He said, yeah, well, I had that giant helmet on, and I look like Forrest Gump out there.
How many pitchers do you really know that, like, there are some, but how many pitchers do you know that, like, they're up to bat and you're like, that you know what, this guy knows what he's doing? Or when they're running the bases, like, usually there are some pitchers that look like they've never held a bat before.
Pretty much,
yeah. They run the bases and they've got, like, their jacket on if it's one of the outdoor games. Like, you just pulled me off the couch and now I have to run.
Yeah, yeah.
He wasn't that.
He looked somewhat natural out there. I was just amazed. It was on the first pitch he saw, too.
Yeah.
Very first pitch
that was
thrown.
It wasn't wasting any time.
Yeah, it wasn't wasting any time at all. Let's get to the news on the Arizona Diamondbacks before we preview tonight's matchup, because there is no doubt news about it. The Arizona Diamondbacks have announced that Zach Gallen, or that Caleb Smith, I should say, has been removed from the rotation and is now in the bullpen. Now, initially, there was no replacement for his spot in the rotation named, but Steve Gilbert from MLB.com tweeted out about 40 minutes ago, the Diamondbacks have announced Taylor Widener as their starter for Friday's home opener against the Reds. That would have been Caleb Smith's turn. Widener can be bumped because there was an off day on Monday. So that off day allowed them to move him in with his same amount of rest. While that solves Friday's problem, the club will have to figure out who's going to start on Saturday before it can swing around again to Luke Weaver on Sunday. So now the question is, okay, it's going to be Widener on Friday. Who is it on Saturday? Is it a good old-fashioned bullpen game? Is Zach Gallen ready to go by then? He's supposed to throw 80 pitches tonight or today. I don't know if it was today or tonight in an alternate site game. I wouldn't think he'd be able to turn it around a Saturday if he's going to do that on a Wednesday. It seems like they would need another option on Saturday at that point.
I would think so. I mean, if Gallen's pitching on Saturday, he basically would have missed not even really two full turns in the rotation at that point. Basically two. I mean, if that's the case, and even if that's not the case, like we were talking earlier, even if it's like, well, no, it's not going to be Gallen on Saturday, the fact that he's throwing 80 pitches and we're even having this conversation, if it's Gallen next Saturday, that's a lot better than we were thinking a couple weeks ago. And honestly, how about, like, your feeling about this team after the game on Saturday? You're 0-3. When's Zach Gallen coming back? Now you're 2-3, and it doesn't seem like Zach Gallen's that far away from coming back.
No, I mean, Caleb Smith obviously pitched very poorly against San Diego. His removal, it's a little quick, but it shouldn't come as that big of a surprise. Taylor Widener's kind of promotion into what it feels like a much more semi-permanent spot in the rotation seems like a little bit of a surprise, given that it was only one start in his first major league start at that. But I suppose the takeaway here is that Zach Gallen's throwing 80 pitches tonight at an alternate site game. And to your point, he's close. He's very close. To the point where Torey Lovello was talking on SiriusXM MLB Radio today on the good news they're getting from Gallen.
We've gotten very good news over the past week with Zach. He's throwing games over at our alt site. He initiated some curveballs in his last bullpen. He's going to throw 60 to 70 pitches today in a game, and he's going to throw some curveballs, and he says he's feeling very good. So my conversations with him have led me to think that he is getting very, very close. But we got to make sure before we pull the trigger that we get everybody checked off on this, and that when he steps back in here, he can give us a full season.
All right, that was Torey on SiriusXM Radio today. Time for the pitching matchup. Tonight, when the game is on the line and you've been injured, nobody matches up to the Berg Simpson Law Firm. Visit BergSimpson.com. That's BURGSimpson.com. Good lawyers changing lives. For the Rockies, I should say, righty Antonio Senzatella gets the start tonight. He's rocking an ERA right around 19 or so on the season. Madison Bumgarner gets the start tonight for the Arizona Diamondbacks. He rocking an ERA of about 13.5 after his opening day start against San Diego.
These Bumgarner starts just take on so much more meaning, don't they?
Yes.
It's like the opener against San Diego, okay, San Diego's loaded. That lineup is ridiculous. I mean, I guess there's a built-in excuse here if we want to make it for him. If he has a bad one, okay, this is in Coors Field. But, I mean, at a certain point, you're the number one starter. So it's like we need – anytime he pitches well, it's going to feel like five good games. You know?
Yeah, and I think you're right. Every single outing he has takes on just this added weight, this added importance where – you're watching the radar gun on every single pitch, and you're watching to see how it does and how deep it goes, because there's just so much riding financially and otherwise on his success, you know? And it's an enormous burden, you know? And it's going to be like this all year long, I think, when it comes to watching Mad Bum starts.
Even if Zach Gallen comes back soon and pitches the way Zach Gallen has pitched, albeit it's a limited sample size, but for his whole career, they still need Madison Bumgarner to be good. And like he may not have to be a true number one if Zach Gallen comes back, but he cannot be what he was last year.
Yeah. All right, let's get you some keys to tonight's game.
Listen, man, I'm a huge key master.
I am the key master.
D-backs keys to the game, brought to you by San Chevrolet. Sands makes it easy. Shop how and where you want. Online in the new San showroom. Find new roads at sanchevrolet.com.
Usually Gambo and I talk about who's going to handle the keys to the game before we do this. Luke and I did not have that conversation. Luke, do you have a key to tonight's game?
I do have a key to the game,
fantastic.
Actually.
So there we go. That's great. Thank you.
Madison Bumgarner, I'll stick with him. They need him to go more than five innings. And this is the stat that is just, it's nauseating if you're a Diamondbacks fan. Okay, he went four innings the first game, taxed the bullpen right out of the gate. Last season, though, nine starts, never went more than 5 1/3. Like, they need Madison Bumgarner. He doesn't need to pitch eight shutout innings, but they need, like, 6 1/3 of, like, he gave up two runs. Which, it's Madison Bumgarner. It shouldn't be that much to ask.
No, but it is Coors Field.
It is Coors Field.
But the way Madison Bumgarner has pitched, it might be too much to ask. We'll see. 5:40 first pitch. You'll hear it on ESPN 620 tonight. We'll keep you updated on the course of that game while we're still on the air here on the Burns and Gambo Show. And finally, the Major League Baseball standings. And it's brought to you by PNC Bank Financial Tools and Tech. to help make things easier. Dodgers have already won. No, they lost today, as a matter of fact. They did. They ended up losing to the A's. They're 5-2 on the season. The A's got their first win of the year. Bob Melvin's crew 1-6 to start the year. The Dodgers are 5-2. The Padres 4-3. The Giants are 3-3. And then Diamondbacks are 2-3 with the Colorado Rockies bringing up the rear at 1-4. Man, the Cincinnati Reds, 5-1. They've already outscored the opposition by 31 runs.
What is going on in Cincinnati?
That's crazy. That's right up there with the Astros. They're 5-1, and they've outscored the opposition by 27 runs. So, again, that game coming up tonight on ESPN 620, and that has been D-backs on Deck.